We're going to be talking about some rather chilling things tonight, sisters. We're going to be talking about grandmothers who cut the throats of their grandchildren and the antithesis of that. So there are some important lessons here for us all. Well then, because we are talking about the rescue of young King Joash, as he was to become 7 years later, from the hand of Athaliah, we just need to get our bearings straight as to where we sit in the scheme of things in this chapter that we've just read. Here we are, as you can see from the red arrow, we have the reign of Athaliah, 6 years, appropriately 6 years, of course. The reign of Athaliah ends here with her overthrow by Jehoiada the priest and the accession of King Joash at age 7. I don't think there's too many 7-year-olds in the Bible school that could effectively rule an ecclesia or a family, leave alone a land. So it's quite clear, isn't it, that Jehoiada was king. He was king for quite some time. And in fact, when they buried him amongst the kings because he had been effectively king of Judah. And while he was there, Joash reigned well. When Jehoiada was gone, it was a disaster, as we're going to see. Now you'll notice that we step up here to Israel in the north, that there was also a political earthquake occurring there in Israel. Now that political earthquake was due to the fact that God had decreed the destruction of the house of Ahab. Ahab had had two successors, his son Ahaziah, who died after a couple of years, and Joram or Jehoram. And it was Jehu, whose name, by the way, means Yah is He, it was Jehu who wiped out the house of Ahab on behalf of God. So this is the time of the rescue and the accession of young King Joash, who, by the way, may well come up in our studies during the week on the matter of judgment. This young king was totally dependent on Jehoiada the priest and on Jehoshabath, Jehoiada's wife. And that's one of the most interesting and curious marriages that have ever been contracted in history, leave alone in the Bible, as we're going to see. But before we can get into this story, we need to look at the background. We need to look at why it was that this disaster had overtaken not only the house of Judah, but the house of Ahab in the north. Why was it that all of these unbelievably evil things were going on at this time? Well, it was because one of the greatest educators in Israel's history had made a serious mistake. He made a serious mistake because he became too confident in his own strength. I want to take you back to the record of 2 Chronicles chapter 17 and 18. And here are two chapters that we're not going to work through in any detail at all. Because what I'm going to demonstrate to you is that all you really need to understand is what happened in chapter 18 verse 1 to see what happened in Judah and why the disaster of Athaliah's rule occurred in the first place. And the nuptials of Jehoram, that was the son, the eldest son of King Jehoshaphat, and Athaliah, evidently the eldest daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. It's a great place to find a wife, isn't it? The house of Ahab and Jezebel. This marriage of Jehoram and Athaliah portrays the tragic story of 2 Chronicles 17 and 18. And King Jehoshaphat, one of the finest kings in Judah's history, was to pay a heavy price for his marriage alliance with Ahab and Jezebel. That's what this verse 1 of chapter 18 is telling us. He made a marriage alliance. It says, "Now Jehoshaphat had riches and honour in abundance and joined affinity with Ahab." The word in the Hebrew for joined affinity is chafan. It means to give a daughter away in marriage, hence to contract affinity by marriage. So there was a wedding arranged between Jehoram, Jehoshaphat's oldest son, and Athaliah, Ahab and Jezebel's oldest daughter. And their names portray what happens in the early part of Jehoshaphat's reign and the latter part of Jehoshaphat's reign. Jehoram means Yahweh raised. That's what he named his oldest son. And that really was a testimony to what had happened in the first years of his rule. It tells us the positive story of growth and development through education in the truth that we read of in 2 Chronicles chapter 17. Now, without going down that record, if you just cast your eye down 2 Chronicles 17, you'll see phrases like that he soared high in the ways of Yahweh, that he sent forth priests and Levites to educate the nations. He built the largest army in Judah's history. He had unbelievable strength because God blessed him. He was an educator in the ways of God, and he made sure his people knew and understood what the truth demanded of him, of them. And moreover, he did it for a reason. We are told what the reason was. Verse 4 says, he sought the God of his father and walked in his commandments, and not after the doings of Israel. Verse 3 told us that he sought not to Balaam. In other words, he saw what was going on in the northern kingdom, ruled by Ahab and Jezebel, with all of their idolatry and their Baals, and he said, no way! We're not going to have that down here in Judah. And he set out to educate his people in the ways of God, in distinct contrast to what was happening in the north. But he got so strong that in the end he thought to himself, well, maybe we can help our brethren who are in apostasy. Maybe we can do something for them. Look at my army. 1,160,000 trained men. We're strong enough. And God has blessed us. We can help our brethren in the north. Fatal. Absolutely fatal. It brought the house of David and the promises of God to David to within a hair's breadth of total ruin. Wrong decision. And Athaliah, the woman that he married to his oldest son, the heir to the throne, her name means Yah hath constrained. And that is the sad story of decline that we read of in 2 Chronicles chapter 18 and beyond. From chapter 18, verse 1, sisters, it was all downhill for the great educator of Judah. And the strength that he had dissipated until finally his army was scattered upon the hills, said Micaiah the prophet. Scattered upon the hills with no shepherd. But you've got Jehoshaphat as king. Sorry, no shepherd. What a disaster that is. Wrong choice of policy. Wrong choice of wife for his son. Absolute disaster in the tail end. This is the story. 2 Chronicles 17, he strengthened himself against idolatrous Israel. He soared high in the things of God. He built strong physical and spiritual defences in Judah. He developed Judah's largest army in its history. He acquired riches and honour. That's the story of chapter 17. The story of chapter 18 is different. He's bound to Ahab's dubious political imperatives. He's unable to respond to the warning to the divine messenger, Micaiah. His army is defeated, scattered and demoralised. And he forfeited nearly all of the gains of his earlier years. That is the background for the story of Athaliah and Jehoshaphat, contrasting mothers in Israel. Now, many of you will be aware, sisters, that when you come to the genealogy of the Lord Jesus Christ, to be sure, that of his father Joseph, that there are four rulers omitted in Matthew chapter 1. You're aware of that, aren't you? There are four rulers omitted. Because, you see, it says here that Asa begat Jehoshaphat. They were two great men, by the way. And Jehoshaphat begat Jehoram. That's the one who got married to Athaliah. And Jehoram begat Uzziah, which of course is not true. It is simply not true. Jehoram did not beget Uzziah. Uzziah was his great-great-great-grandson. So there are four rulers missing. And missing are Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, who became king and was king for 2 years. Athaliah, who ruled for 6 years, Joash, who ruled for 40 years, and Amaziah, who ruled, I think, from memory, for 29. They're missing. They're simply not there. Now, if you had a family genealogy and four people got missed out, they might get a bit upset. God left them out. Why? What is he doing? Well, we need to explore that. Well, here's the actual history. Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, begat Ahaziah, who reigned 2 years and was then slain by Jehu, as we read in the record of 2 Chronicles 22. On his death, as we also read, his mother Athaliah slew all his children, except for the youngest Joash, who was saved by Jehoshaphat. Athaliah ruled Judah for 6 years, and Joash acceded to the throne aged 7 years and reigned for 40 years. Amaziah, his son, reigned 29 years and begat Uzziah. So finally we get to Uzziah. Matthew chapter 1 says that Jehoram begat Uzziah. But that's the actual history. So why are they missing? Why is it that God has left them out? Well, it's some very simple reasons. And here's one of them. In 1 Kings 21, verses 21 to 22, God said this concerning the house of Ahab. He was doomed to total abolition. Behold, I will bring evil upon thee, and will take away thy posterity, and will cut off from Ahab every male, and him that is shut up and left in Israel, and will make thine house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha the son of Ahijah, for the provocation wherewith thou hast provoked me to anger and made Israel to sin. So Ahab's house was doomed. And that's why God raised up Jehu, Yah is he, to destroy him and to revive Israel spiritually. Of course, that didn't prove to be the case. But that was God's aim, to revive Israel spiritually and to remove from them not only the Baalism of Ahab and Jezebel, but of course the apostasy of Jeroboam as well. Now here's Ahab's family tree. Ahab took for his wife Jezebel, the daughter of a king, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of Sidon. And so he took an idolatrous wife. And we know, of course, that in the Apocalypse of chapter 2, she is used as a type of the developing Catholic apostasy in the midst of the ecclesia of God. So that's what he did. He brought the initial elements of the Catholic apostasy into the ecclesia of God. Athaliah was their eldest daughter, married to Jehoram of Judah. Their oldest son was Ahaziah. He died after a 2-year reign. In a drunken stupor, he fell down from the top of his palace through a lattice that was not made in accordance with the law of Moses, and so he died. He was the one who sent the messenger to Elijah, remember? And Elijah, when he got this the first band of messengers, a captain and his 50, he blew them off the face of the earth, and the second one. It wasn't only because of the intervention of God, of course, but the third group, the captain and the 50, were saved from the same fate. That's the story of how Ahaziah came to his end, because Elijah said to him, "You will surely die," and he did. He was replaced by his brother Jehoram, who was killed by Jehu. His progeny were also annihilated. So the house of Ahab is starting to get pretty raw. Athaliah and Jehoram's sons were taken captive by the Arabians and the Philistines. And did you notice what it said in 2 Chronicles 22, verse 1? For the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, his younger son, king in his stead. For the band of men that came with the Arabians and the Philistines, as it says in the companion record, to the camp had slain all the eldest. So the children of this marriage, Jehoram and Athaliah, the oldest children, were all slain by the Arabians. That left Ahaziah, the sole surviving son of Jehoram and Athaliah. And he was slain by Jehu, aged 22. But there were a few children. Ahaziah had a few children. And this is where grandma comes in. Because as soon as Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, heard of the death of her son at the hand of Jehu, she got a couple of men with razor blades and she went around cutting the throats of her grandchildren. That's what it says in verse 10 of 2 Chronicles 22. When Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal of the house of Judah. Now she's some grandmother, isn't she? My wife is a grandmother of 10 grandchildren. And after a week away from them, she has serious withdrawal symptoms. For me to try and even begin to conjure up a picture of her harming her grandchildren in any way, leave alone cutting their throats, is almost, it's impossible. So what kind of grandmother do we have here that can go around cutting the throats of her own grandchildren? Think about that. She's a mother in Israel, isn't she? Oh yes. I'd like to have her as a grandmother. So this is the kind of thing that was going on, because Jehoshaphat introduced this woman, Athaliah, into his family, marrying her to Jehoram, his oldest son. We're going to show you some more consequences of that in a moment. However, the sons of Ahaziah were slain by Athaliah, except for one survivor, a six-month-old baby called Joash. And if she'd got her hands on him, the line of David would have been extinct. What about the promises of God? David, you'll never want a man to sit upon the throne. Would have been extinct. Of course, God made sure that that didn't happen. But that's how close it got. Right down to the wire. Because of the activities of this woman, Athaliah. Now, the character of the true God is spelled out for us in Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 9. Well, Yahweh says to his people through Moses, thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them, for I, Yahweh thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. Now this is an addition to what we read in Exodus 34, verses 6 to 9. The statement is made here that is not made back there, that Yahweh's judgments are upon the third to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. And this is the explanation as to why the four rulers are omitted in Matthew chapter 1. Who were they? Can we remember? Who were they? Ahaziah. He hated Yahweh. Athaliah. Hated Yahweh. Who was the next one? Joash, for 40-odd years, no, not quite 40 years, but 30-odd years, he loved Yahweh. He built his house. He promoted the work. He prospered the nation. But then, when Jehoiada was dead, he turned under the influence of the princes, and he came to hate Yahweh. What about his son, Amaziah? He's the man that kept punching people in the nose and wondered why things kept going wrong for him. You know, pushing 10,000 Edomites off the cliff. That's the best way to make friends, isn't it? That kind of man. Well, Amaziah ended up being killed by his own people. They hated him because he was the one who brought false altars into Israel. He was the man who brought false gods back from his victories over those he had defeated. He goes and defeats the nation and says, "Whoa, we've got a great victory here." I didn't say that Yahweh gave him. He says, "Well, what I'm going to do is bring back the gods of the nation I've defeated." Now that is real common sense, isn't it? He hated Yahweh. And that's why he's not in the list. This is the principle. Yahweh's judgment to the third and fourth generation of them that hate him. So three generations of David's line were destroyed for apostasy and idolatry, and four rulers were forgotten in Matthew chapter 1 because of the edict against Ahab's house. So let's take a closer look then at the family tree of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. Now we don't know whether he only had one wife or a number of wives. What we do know is that he had two sons that were named with the same name. He had an Azariah and an Azariah. I don't think they ran out of names. Maybe it's a different wife. But anyway, whatever the case might be, these were his sons, starting with Jehoram the eldest. And it says of Jehoshaphat that he was a faithful and loyal man, and he gave the kingship to Jehoram because of the right of the firstborn. He wanted to do what was right by God, and the law said, you will give the right of the firstborn to him. And that's what he did. He might have had some misgivings about Jehoram, we don't know. But whatever the case, he was faithful to the word of God. So Jehoram marries Athaliah. I wonder who it was that gave advice to Jehoram to cut the throats of his brothers. Every single one of them. They were all slain by Jehoram, their older brother, at the same time. I wonder who it was that whispered in his ear one night, you know what? You've got 6 or 7 brothers. And one day, one of them might rise up and say, I'm going to be king. Might be a good idea, Jehoram, to get rid of them. And so Athaliah's advice was taken, and he killed his own brothers. So I think we can see how it is that when it came time for her to seize power, she was prepared to kill her own grandchildren. That's the kind of grandmother and wife and sister-in-law that she was. You wouldn't want too many of those in your ecclesia, would you? But Judah had one. Well, as we saw, Jehoram's sons were taken and killed by the invaders. Ahaziah was slain by Jehu, and we come down to Joash. We're going to focus now on this young king, Joash. How did he become king? Well, as we said, David's line was almost destroyed. Did you notice when I read verse 2 of 2 Chronicles 22, I said 22 years and not 42? I did that deliberately because that's how it should read. You want proof? Write down 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 26. There is no way that he could have been 42 years old. He would have been older than his father. But anyway, 22 is the right age. He was only a young man. He took the throne at 22. He reigned for 2 years. It didn't last too long. But you notice also when I read down through here, in verse 2, the last sentence says, his mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. But that is not correct. Did you notice that? This is how you've got to read your Bible, sisters. This is how you read your Bible. You don't just read what's there. You read it and ask, is that right? Why does it say it that way? Why does it leave that out? Why don't we read about that? Why does it put it this way? You've got to ask questions. That's why God has given the Bible the way he has. It's not a children's book. It's not an ABC thing. It's about thinking. It's about using our grey matter to understand his mind. And he conceals these things. He puts these sorts of things in the Word so that we can find them. We call them gems, don't we? So this is, it's not a big gem, but it's a gem. It's a gem worth knowing about. And those of you who have heard this before, you know the answer straight away. And on the screen, if you've got your eyes on the screen, you'll see the answer's there. She was the daughter of Ahab. And the reason is given in verse 3. And it says this. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab. Naturally. His mother is Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. For his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. His mother was his counselor. I'm not going to take you to Micah chapter 6, verse 16, but this is what it said. The statutes of Omri are kept, and all the works of the house of Ahab. And that is the principle why the scripture tells us that Athaliah is the daughter of Omri. Because you read on, and it says this in verse 4. Wherefore, he did evil in the sight of Yahweh like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. So twice we are told that his mother was his counselor. And that was precisely the situation in the house of Omri and Ahab. Omri is a character that just sort of flicks by in the record. He's the man, by the way, who bought the hill Shemer and created the city Samaria. So he wasn't an inconsequential king. He also had a civil war on his hands. He had to defeat Tibni, a man of straw, his name means. And Omri defeated him. He bought the hill of Shemer, he built the city of Samaria and made it a very powerful and prosperous place. So he was no inconsequential king, any more than Cush, the father of Nimrod, was inconsequential in the scheme of things. Do you know who developed all the doctrines of the Catholic Church? Some would say Nimrod, forget it. It wasn't Nimrod. It was Cush, his father. Cush was the great original prophet of the Babylonian mysteries. And he taught his son Nimrod, who rose up and used those principles that his father had taught him to rebel against Yahweh and to build the Tower of Babel, so that Yahweh had to divide the nations, the family of man, into 70. And ever since the call of Abraham, he's been working to unwind and undo the work of Nimrod. So when you ask, do you ever get a chance to ask the angels of God or the Son of God what God thinks about Cush, you'll get an earful. Okay? Because he was the counselor and Nimrod was the worker. And so it was in the house of Omrod. He was the counselor. He was the ideas man. He was the one who put all the principles there. And Ahab simply did what his father taught him. And that's precisely what happens here. It was Athaliah who gave counsel to Ahaziah, her son. And he performed in Judah the works of the house of Israel. That's why she's called the daughter of Omri, and not, as she should have been called, if you and I were writing it, the daughter of Ahab. Ahab just happens to mean resembling the father. And that's what he was. Omri gave the counsel. Ahab resembled his father. He followed him, word for word, statute for statute. So we have, of course, on the base of the screen there, reference to Revelation 2, verse 23. Because this woman, Jezebel, who had so much influence in Israel in the north, and her daughter Athaliah, who had so much influence in the south, were forerunners of the apostasy which destroyed the first and second century ecclesias and produced the Roman Catholic harlot system that can be traced right back to Cush and Nimrod. Okay? Well, the end of the chapter tells us about a very curious marriage. Verse 11. Here is the saviour of Joash, the six-month-old baby. But Jehoshabath, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the kings that were being slain, as the Hebrew has it. So it was in the very act, as she saw these men going around, opening up bedrooms and going in there and grabbing babies, cut their throats. She saw this happening. Oh, no. So she ran into the room where young Joash was, and she grabbed him with a nurse and shoved him under the bed. Hit them. She's a young woman. What a young woman. We're going to see. She saved him. You know what the record says in verse 11, second sentence? So Jehoshabath, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah so that she slew him not. Her name means whose oath is Yahweh. And there's probably never been a woman more dedicated to Yahweh than this one. I'll show you why. Whose oath is Yahweh? Hands up, young girls under the age of 30 in this room tonight who would marry a man 95 years of age. No hands. I'm very surprised. Not a single hand. Well, she did. She was the daughter of Jehoram, possibly by another wife. We don't know. She's the only recorded princess to marry the high priest. So it's starting to get a little bit of exclusivity about this, isn't it? She could not have been older than 28. That's the maximum age she could have been when these events occurred in 2 Chronicles 22, verse 11. She could not have been more than 28. She was probably younger. Jehoiada could not have been less than 95. There's just no way. He began his ministry at age 30 in the early reign of King Asa. Let me remind you of how many kings there have been since King Asa. Early reign of King Asa, then came Jehoshaphat, then came Jehoram, then came Ahaziah. He could not have been less than 95, maybe older. Do you reckon that a young girl whose oath was not Yahweh would have done this? Don't think so. There was something about this marriage that was very curious indeed. It was unique. You had the high priest marrying a daughter of David. What would their progeny be, do you think? King priest? What do you reckon? Think about that. Because you know what, sisters? The son of Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat was named Zechariah. And in Matthew 24, the Lord Jesus Christ uses him as a type of himself. Just before he was about to be crucified, so he could become king priest. Okay? Produced a unique son, a royal priest. And it just so happens that Zechariah, their son, must have been between 30 and 40 years of age when he was murdered. I like to think it might have been 33. Because he is a type of Christ. We might get to see that in our studies during the course of this week. Interesting, isn't it? Well, what about this King Joash, the 7-year-old king of Judah? We name him the ungrateful dependent because he was a man who was dependent all his life on other people. He never got to a stage in life where he made his own decisions without being influenced by other people. And there are some people like that. If he only had made decisions for himself to serve his God with all his heart and soul and strength, the disaster might not have occurred. His name even is a misnomer. It means Yahweh fired. But he was not fired by Yahweh. He was Jehoiada fired for the first part of his reign. He's first mentioned in 2 Kings 11:2, last 2 Chronicles 25, verse 25. The length of his reign was 40 years. He was 7 years old at his accession, 47 at death. His father was Ahaziah, his mother Zibiah. And he was contemporary with Jehu, Jehoahaz, and Jehoash, sons of Jehu. The significant omission, of course, where his name should have appeared, is in Matthew chapter 1, as we've seen. But he's not there in the genealogy of Joseph. And he had a wonderful privilege. You see what it says in verse 12 of 2 Chronicles 22? He was with them, that is with Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat, hid in the house of God 6 years. And Athaliah reigned over the land. It doesn't say she reigned over the people. I want you to have a look at the last verse of chapter 23. Perhaps before we get to the last verse of chapter 23, we might read verse 13 of chapter 23. Because Athaliah heard the noise of the people in verse 12, and she comes into the temple for the only time in her whole life, because she simply was not interested in the house of God. In fact, she would have liked it destroyed. But she comes into the house of God, and verse 13 says, and she looked, and behold, the king stood at his pillar at the entering in, and the princes and the trumpets by the king. You know what that pillar was? It's the same place that Joash later ordered that his cousin Zechariah be stoned to death, the place where he had been anointed king at age 7. And it says in that verse, she came in, and the princes and the trumpets by the king, and all the people of the land rejoiced. That's what it says in verse 21 of this chapter. And all the people of the land rejoiced. Yes, she ruled over the land, but she did not rule over the people of the land. Fortunately, they were still in the hand of Yahweh through the influence of Jehoiada, the high priest. So here he is, Joash, the rightful heir to David's throne, the only survivor, male survivor of that house. And Zechariah, his cousin, who was heir to the high priesthood and a son of David on his mother's side, they grew up in the house of God. That's where your children are growing up, sisters. That's where my grandchildren are growing up, fortunately. They're growing up in the house of God, except that it's not a literal building. It's an ecclesia. In our case, a number of ecclesias. And that's how it should be. Our children should grow up in the house of God. It should be their whole life. Their whole life should revolve around the house of God. And Joash and Zechariah's life did exactly that. They grew up with the same parents because Joash had been adopted by Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat. They had the same upbringing. They sat around the same table. When the readings were done, they got the same information. They had the same education and the truth. They went to the same Sunday school. It didn't turn out the same. And that's the tragedy of it. It didn't turn out the same in the end. And Athaliah had her life ended in a place where she rightfully belonged, in the horse gate. In the horse gate of the house of God. She only ever came there once, and that was to die. She didn't belong in the house of God. It's quite a story, this, isn't it? The accession of Joash, which occurs in chapter 23, is followed by his reign. And for the first part of his reign, he did well, under the guidance and tutelage of Jehoiada. Have a look at chapter 24, verse 1. Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Joash did that which was right in the sight of Yahweh all the days of Jehoiada the priest. Verse 3, and Jehoiada took for him 2 wives, and he begat sons and daughters. So Jehoiada even chooses his wives. He's absolutely dependent on the high priest. He'd been rescued by the high priest's wife, raised and brought up by these two wonderful people. And he did right all the days of Jehoiada. He was minded to repair the temple, we read. He declared his disgust for the desecrators of the temple. He collected large sums of money for the temple project. He was supported by the princes and the people in doing this. He successfully completed the temple project. He dedicated the vessels to the temple, and he remained faithful all the days of Jehoiada. That was one side of his life. How often is it, sisters, that you have seen, as I have seen, people, brethren and sisters, who have spent the best part of their life as faithful servants of God in the house of God, and then the wheels have fallen off and they've become the absolute antithesis of that? I taught a few in Sunday school. I know a bit about it. And I know the potential of human nature in myself. I've seen it happen to others. People's lives can have 2 absolutely opposite outcomes. First half can be faithful. The second half can be an absolute disaster for them, their wives and their children. Something goes wrong. I'll tell you what goes wrong. In most cases, of course, it's a lack of faith. It's a failure of faith. But sometimes that failure of faith is caused by the same problem that Joash had. He never became his own man. He never could make decisions for himself. He was always influenced by other people. And when Jehoiada was dead, he was ostensibly independent. Ostensibly independent. And it wasn't like that at all. He succumbed very quickly to the advances of the princes who had previously been supporters of the work. He forsook the house of God and turned to idolatry. He refused to listen to the rebuke of Yahweh's prophets. He gave command to stone his own cousin Zechariah in the court of the temple. And he was sorely wounded by the Syrian invaders whom God sent to judge him. And then he was assassinated by his own servants on whom he was entirely dependent. So here is this pitiful man who never became anything other than a dependent creature. Didn't have the essential element to get people into the kingdom of God, and that is a personal relationship with God that is made by you and not by someone else. Not easily broken. Well then, let's have a quick look at some of the things that this King Joash did. 2 Chronicles 24, verses 4 to 13. We read in verse 4, it came to pass that he was minded to repair the house of Yahweh. So Jehoiada had obviously, and Jehoshaphat had played her part to direct this young man towards the temple. It needed repairs. Athaliah prayed for 6 years. Nothing had been done to it. Needed repairs. And so they directed him toward it. And he took this up. Rotherham says that it was near the heart of Joash to repair the temple. The word repair means to rebuild or to renew. And verse 5 tells us, and he gathered together the priests, etc., and they gathered money in order that they might repair the house of God. That word means to make strong, to restore to strength, or to mend. But they hastened not the matter, it says in the end of verse 5. And he was upset about that, and he rebuked his adopted father, Jehoiada, for the lack of intensity in repairing the house of God. In doing this, if we go to the companion account of 2 Kings chapter 12, we read certain things about what Joash did under the guidance of Jehoiada. 2 Kings chapter 12. We read in 2 Kings 12 and verse 4 that Jehoash, same man by the way, it's got an E and an H in it, but it's the same king. Jehoash said to the priests, all the money of the dedicated things that is brought into the house of Yahweh, even the money of every one that passeth the account, the money that every man is set at, and all the money that cometh into any man's heart to bring into the house of Yahweh, let the priests take it to them, every man of his acquaintance, and let them repair the breaches, the gaps, the leaks of the house, wheresoever any breach shall be found. Okay? So there are three types of contribution here that Joash collects from the people. When it says there in verse 4, everyone that passeth the account, you notice the words the account are not in the text, they're in italics. Everyone that passeth, this word is abar, it's the root of Hebrew, by the way. The word is used in Exodus 30, verse 13, of the half shekel of the sanctuary paid by every Israelite who was numbered in a census. It was later collected by the Jews annually. We know that from Matthew 17, verse 24. So this was the half shekel of the sanctuary. Everybody had to pay equally. Whether you were rich or poor, you paid the half shekel of the sanctuary because you had to declare to God your need of redemption. So you paid silver, half shekel of the sanctuary, silver. Didn't matter whether you were great or small, rich or poor, God was telling you, you need redemption. That is what it's referring to when it says here, everyone that passeth the account. Then it says in that verse, that every man is set at, the money that every man is set at. That word in the Hebrew is erek, it means to estimate or to value. It's used 9 times in Leviticus 27, verses 2 to 8, of the price to redeem vows. And the priest had the role of setting the price for the redemption of a vow. You could say X number of shekels or whatever it might have been. So this was the giving of what the priest had determined. The third one was this. And all the money that cometh into any man's heart. This word Allah means to ascend, cometh. Ascend or to spring up. Hence, literally it should read, come up upon his heart. In other words, this was a free will offering. So there were three types of contribution that went into building the house of God or repairing the house of God in the days of Joash. Three forms. And here are those three forms and their antithesis. One, the duty required of every man. And the principle behind that was submission to your obligations. What's the antithesis to submitting to your obligations, sisters? Well, it's the opposite, isn't it? Lawlessness. Not submitting to your obligations. A lawless attitude. There's a reason why I'm doing this. Just tuck these away. Two. The second contribution was the value of dedication over and above duty. This is about willingness to offer more in the building than what you might have been required to offer. The antithesis of that is a deliberate breaking down of the house. Rather than giving more to build, you break down. Okay? And the third form of contribution was offerings freely given from the heart, which of course refer to the principle of total dedication to Yahweh. What's the antithesis of total dedication to God? Well, it's dedication to false gods, isn't it? So you got those three contributions and their antithesis? Well, Joash at least understood this much through his education via Jehoiada. He understood that this is what Athaliah did. She did the antithesis to what Joash was doing. Because you see, the desecrations of Athaliah are referred to back in the record of 2 Chronicles 24, so we need to go back there. Which Chronicles? 2 Chronicles 24. And verse 7, it says this. This is what Joash says to Jehoiada and to all the priests as he impresses upon them the need for urgency. He says, "For the sons of Athaliah, that wicked woman, have broken up the house of God, and also all the dedicated things of the house of Yahweh did they bestow upon Balaam." So here is the antithesis to the three forms of collection that were taken to build the house. Now these sons of Athaliah were the older brothers of Ahaziah. Before they were taken away by the Philistines and the Arabians, as is recorded in chapter 21, verse 17, this is what they did. Under the encouragement of their mother. That wicked woman, she's called. It means a female wicked doer. And Rotherham translates this phrase, Athaliah, the lawless. So what kind of children would she produce, I wonder? Lawless children. So her policy was very simple. Encourage and promote lawlessness among God's servants. Her second policy was this. Use the immature young people to desecrate and break up the house of God, the ecclesia. Now this would never happen in modern times, would it? We would never have any sisters in our meeting who would encourage their children to break down ecclesial standards. We'd never have that, would we? We'd never have any sister who would say to her kids, well, that's what the AB say, but forget about that. Toss that stuff out. You do what you please. That had never happened, would it? Or are my eyes telling me that it does happen? That was Athaliah's policy. Use the young people to break down the house of God. And it was successful. What about her third policy? Antithetical to the third form of contribution. A willing heart to dedicate to Yahweh. Well, she dedicated the vessels of the house of God, and the vessels, of course, are symbolic for individuals. Those vessels belong to Yahweh. She dedicated them to worldly gods. She said to her kids, go out in the world. You know, you can go to the flicks. You go and do this. I don't care what friends you have in the world. You go and do what you please. That's the way to build the house of God, isn't it? That was her policy. What a mother in Israel she was. Well, fortunately, her policy was overthrown. Sadly, it didn't last. Because this is what happened in 2 Chronicles 24, verse 13. So the workmen wrought, and the work was perfected by them. Interesting, isn't it? Perfected by them. There's two Hebrew words there. Ala ariyukar, it means literally to ascend to wholeness. I want you to think about this. We're talking about the house of God here, sisters. And we are the house of God, the ecclesia. And Paul tells us something about how to build in the house of God. He tells us what the purpose of it is. He tells us what the outcome is going to be in the end. And the house of God needs to ascend to wholeness, doesn't it? It says in that record, they set the house of God in his state and strengthened it. So they set it, F-A-M-A-D, the stand itself, which is what, unfortunately, Joash did not do in his life. The house of God, Bayit Elohim, literally the house of mighty ones. And Paul, of course, picks up that kind of language in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 15 when he talks about how we should behave ourselves in the house of God, which is the ecclesia of living God, people who manifest God in their lives. So that when you look at them, you say, there's God, living God, walking around as manifestations of him. That's the language that Paul uses of the house of God. In his state, the words in the Hebrew are al math koneh, means to his proportion, building it up to his proportion. And he strengthened it. He made it strong and firm. That is what should happen to the house of God, the ecclesia. And in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 to 16, Paul uses language like that. He says, and he gave gifts unto men, some pastors and teachers. What for? For the edification, for the building up of the house of God. For what end, Paul? That it might grow up with all of the fibres of this body, that it might grow up into the head, even Christ, and stand there in its fullness, in its wholeness. That was the purpose that Christ gave teachers and the power of the Spirit in the first century. That word has yet to finish. That is what we should be about, sisters, building up the house of God. And this is what went on all the days of Jehoiada, says the record of verse 14. And when they had finished it, they brought the rest of the money before the king in Jehoiada, whereof would make vessels for the house of Yahweh, even vessels to minister, and to offer withal spoons and vessels of gold and silver. Language redolent of ecclesial life today. Because vessels, says the Apostle Paul, there are different kinds in the house of God, he says in 2 Timothy 2, 20-21. There are vessels to honour and some to dishonour. He says these vessels need to be built that they might be used in the house of God. And that's what was happening here in the days when Jehoiada had some influence upon Joash. They brought burnt offerings, dedication, mentally, morally and physically. And they were offered continually. And there was stability in the house of God. The stability of the Reformation was attributed in the scriptures to Jehoiada. It says that at the end of verse 14, and they offered burnt offerings in the house of Yahweh continually all the days of Jehoiada. And when they buried him at 130 years of age, they buried him among the kings, it says, in verse 16, because he had effectively been king. He had done good in Israel, both toward God and toward his house. You see the order of that, sisters? He had done good in Israel. Israel? He wasn't in Israel, was he? Jehoiada wasn't in Israel. He was in Judah. He never went anywhere near Israel. So why does it say Israel? You thought about that? Well, you see, what God is telling us, sisters, is this. That if you have an influence in one part of the brotherhood for the good of the house of God, it invariably will impact the whole brotherhood, however hopeless they might be, as Israel and the North were. It will have an impact. You might not be able to quantify it or nominate it, but it will have an impact. He'd done good in Israel, both toward God, he comes first, doesn't he? In every consideration, he comes first, and toward his house. But I'll tell you what he didn't neglect. He did not neglect the raising up of his son, Zechariah, and of Ahaziah's son, Joash, whom he adopted as his own son. He and Jehoshaphat have done a very effective work in raising up their children in the house of God. I'm going to finish very shortly, sisters, if you thought I'm going to keep on going, you're wrong. I'm going to sit down. Because this story has a tragic ending. I want you to think about this, sisters. Most of you, or many of you in this room tonight, are either mothers or grandmothers. You know what it's like to have a baby in your arms, don't you? You know what it's like to see a boy grow up. Some of you know what it's like to have a son who embraces the truth with all his heart, his soul, and his strength. You know what that's like, don't you? Well, this is what happened to Jehoshaphat's son. When Joash turned after the death of Jehoiada, the record says, we'll read from verse 19, yet he sent prophets to them to bring them again unto Yahweh, and they testified against them, but they would not give ear. And the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada. Here is your king priest, okay? The son of Jehoiada the priest, which stood above the people, and said unto them, thus saith God, why transgress ye the commandments of Yahweh, so that ye cannot prosper, as it should read? Because ye have forsaken Yahweh, he hath forsaken you. And they conspired against him, and stoned him with stones at the commandment of the king, in the court of the house of Yahweh. They had to go inside the temple, between the altar and the temple, to get this man. And they stoned him there. And a sword pierced the heart of Jehoshaphat. It wouldn't have been very far away. It wasn't that long before she buried her husband. Now she's buried her son, who was both in the priestly line and the princely line. I can think of another woman whose heart was pierced when the son that she had born was hung on a tree. She was a true mother in Israel. The absolute antithesis of Athaliah. In 2 Samuel 20, verse 19, was another mother in Israel who, when Joab, the murderer of Amasa, turned up at the walls of her city and demanded the head of Sheba, who was in revolt against David, she leaned over the wall and she said this, hey, you Joab, come here. I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Oh, I wouldn't do that, says Joab. He's just stabbed his own cousin to death a couple of days before. Oh, I would never destroy children and mothers in Israel. She knew he would. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of Yahweh? Do you know, sisters, that word inheritance there in 2 Samuel 20, verse 19, is the same word that is used in Psalm 127, verse 3, where it says this, lo, children are an heritage. The Hebrew word is nakala. Same word, inheritance, here. Lo, children are an inheritance of Yahweh, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. That's what you're doing. As mothers in Israel, that's what you're doing. You're bringing a reward to Yahweh. Athaliah only knew how to cut throats.